Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Thank you for joining us for some of the greatest hits of old-time radio. This time, we'll start off with an episode of Frontier Gentlemen. This is called Wonder Boy, and it's from 1958.
There are many claims to the title of fastest gun in the West. I think that in Deadwood, Dakota Territory, I may have met him.
Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. In just a moment, we will bring you the latest report from the Frontier Gentlemen. Why stand on the sidelines when CBS News features like The World Tonight take you directly to where the big news stories are breaking? Tonight, tomorrow, and every night, hear eyewitness reports from CBS News overseas correspondents and lively features and interviews with the very people making the news, as most of these same CBS radio stations present The World Tonight. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
My remittance, as well as a small check from the London Times, were forwarded to me from Cheyenne. Both reached me at the Mark Hotel in Deadwood, Dakota Territory. I cashed them at the Stebbins and Post Company Bank, and once more solvent, decided to do something about my clothes, which, to say the least, had seen better days. I was directed to a tailor shop, which I found housed in a dilapidated frame building, almost at the end of the main street. A freshly painted sign read, Eli Jackson, Taylor, Outfitters. I went in and was met by a tall, thin youth of 16, 17. He greeted me with a shy grin, bowed stiffly, and said,
Afternoon, sir. Can I be of service?
And I thought I'd like to buy a new suit.
Yes, sir. We got a mighty fine selection. Was you figuring on a Sunday go to meeting suit or maybe just a cow rigging?
Well, I'd like to see what you've got.
Well, you step right this way, mister.
All right. Are you Eli Jackson, the tailor?
No, sir. I'm son Dick. I'll pause up the street for a few minutes, but he'll be right back. I guess maybe you want to wait for him?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was thinking of having his suit made.
Oh, sure. Oh, Pa'll fix you up just fine. He's the best tailor in these parts. You want to take a seat? Wait. It'll only be a couple of minutes for sure.
All right.
You live here in Deadwood, mister?
I've been here about a week.
Well, now ain't that something. Me and my Ma and Pa, we got in a week back, too. I guess you can see there's some fixing up to do here. Wasn't much of a place when we moved in, but as soon as we get her straightened around, she'll be the finest store in Dakota. We live in the back.
Where do you come from?
Oklahoma Territory. Pa heard about the gold strikes in the Black Hills, and he says with all them folks coming into Deadwood, there's a regular gold mine in Taylor, and business weren't much back home, so we cut our suspenders and come up here. Sure is a wild, woolly town, ain't it?
A fair description.
You mind my asking, mister, what kind of shooting iron is that?
Hmm? Colt 44.
How you like it?
Well, it's a good gun, serviceable.
I never used one of them. I sure admire to shoot one, though.
Well,
I got me two old Remington 46s Uncle Amos left to me. But sure is a mess of trouble finding cartridges for them. Used to be cap and ball, you know. Yeah, and then they fixed them up to shoot rimfire. Say, I still got a few rounds left. Would you like to take a couple of shots?
Oh, well, I'm not very...
Well, I got a target set up in the back, then maybe... Oh, maybe you could give me a turn with yours?
All right.
Ma and Pa, they don't take to my practicing like I do, but I tell them man's got to keep his handy, and ain't that so?
And I suppose it rather depends what you're practicing for.
Well, I ain't practicing to be no short trigger man, mister. Mr.
Kendall.
Mr. Kendall? But like Uncle Amos used to say, if there's going to be a corpse and cartridge occasion, it's best you learn to roll your gun first.
Either that or stay out of the way of corpse and cartridge occasions.
That ain't always so easy. Uncle Amos, he got himself dry gulched back in Oklahoma. He sure was a peaceable man, too. All right, keep him hanging in here. Ma won't let me keep no guns in my room. You know how women are.
Yes, yes, I know. Those are pretty hefty guns.
Yeah, but they got real smart balance. Action's smoothed down just fine, too. Now, target's over there. You want to try her out?
Oh, yes, I'd like to.
I do my practice from here. I paced it off about 25 feet.
Well, from the looks of it, you're quite a shot.
Well, I can do better, Mr. Kendall. Right now, I'm working on my draw. It's still a mite slow.
Did you put those shots in the bullseye from a draw?
Oh, sure.
From the hip, or did you take time to aim?
Oh, from the hip, but I figure I'm still taking too much time.
Oh, no, no, no. They say accuracy is more important than speed. Those are rather old models you're using, you know.
Well, I'd sure like to see you try that 44, Yorn. Maybe I could learn something.
No, not much from me, I'm afraid. I'll have a go. Here, hold your guns.
Yes, sir.
Ah, now. All right. You say the word, I'll draw.
Ready? Now.
Not bad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's mighty fine shooting, Mr. Kendall.
Thank you. Let me see you try.
Oh, no, I guess not.
Come on.
No, I reckon not.
Go on, put on the belt. I'm curious to see how you handle those relics.
Yes, sir.
I should think they'd be a little heavy for you.
Yeah, they were at first, but I kind of got used to them. Of course, I can't shoot both to once.
No, I've never yet seen a man who could with any accuracy.
Say, maybe we better get back inside. I guess Pa ought to be back by now.
In a minute, I want to see how you hit those bullseyes.
Yes, sir.
Ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now you draw when I say the word. Draw. May I see your gun?
Yes, sir.
How many bullets did you have in there?
5.
Is the other gun loaded? Do you mind doing that again?
I guess so.
Good Lord.
Heard our roadshow starring Tennessee Ernie? You ought to. It reflects Ernie's warm personality right down the line. Young Molly B. and Doris Drew alternate as the featured feminine vocalists on the show. Join us on most of these same stations tomorrow for CBS Radio's easygoing roadshow starring Tennessee Ernie. It's as refreshing as a visit back home.
It was the most unbelievable thing I'd ever seen. Twice, in little more than 1 second, this boy had drawn, fanned the hammers of his ancient guns, and put 5 bullets in a 6-inch circle from a distance of 25 feet. Now he stood, eyes downcast, obviously uncomfortable.
I guess we better see if Pa's back.
Dick, why didn't you want to show me how you shoot?
Well, I figured maybe you'd be mad not buy a suit of clothes from Pa. We sure need the business.
I feel like a bit of a fool. I'm certainly not mad. Awed might be the word. Who taught you to draw like that?
Uncle Amos.
He must have been quite handy with a gun himself.
Oh, he was good. But he said I was better. He'd have his bristles up right now if he'd seen me showing off to you. Uncle Amos always said, never show a man your draw unless you mean it, because someday you might have to throw down with him.
Now, you listen to me, young friend. You'll never have to worry about that with me. I have no wish to commit suicide.
Dick? Dick, where are you? Dick!
Out back, Ma?
Come inside, quick. Your paw's been hurt.
Huh? What's the matter? Pa?
It's all right,
Pa.
It's all right.
Help me get him laid down on the sofa, son.
Yeah, let me help.
Who are you?
It's Mr. Kendall, Pa. Came in for to buy some clothes.
Easy now, but put your weight on me.
What happened? What happened, Ma?
Oh, hush up, Dick. Doctor should be along directly, Eli. Now you rest comfortable. Mm-hmm. Is it still bleeding?
Yeah, I guess so.
Ma? You've been shot.
Miss Jackson, get some clean rags. Tear up a shirt. We've got to stop the bleeding.
Yes. Pa?
Why don't you get to fretting, boy? This looks worse than it is, huh? I ain't gonna die.
Dick, help me get his jacket off.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Pa? Pa? He's dead, mister.
He's fainted. Get some water on to boil. The doctor will need it when he takes out the bullet.
You sure he ain't dead?
I tell you, he's fainted. Now do as you're told.
Here. I had some sheeting put away for bandages.
That's...
Oh.
It's all right. He'll come around.
He's so white.
Loss of blood. Have you got any whiskey?
No. Eli's not a drinking man.
You said the doctor's on his way.
Yes. Somebody went to call him.
There. Hold those against his shoulder. It ought to stop the bleeding.
Oh, yes.
Now, don't try to move, Mr. Jackson.
Lie back, dear.
I feel some better. I guess I went on for a couple of minutes. I'm truly thankful for your help, mister.
It's all right.
Afraid you're going to have to wait a bit for your suit, though, less than you're willing to wear ready-made.
Oh, don't worry about that. Just lie quietly.
That fella, he had no cause.
Paul. I know, dear.
It'll be against the law. Man's got no right.
How did it happen, Mrs. Jackson?
Well, we'd gone to the warehouse to get some bolts of cloth. A couple of drunks come out of Gerber's saloon, start shooting and deviling around. They seen Eli and me coming down the street.
I seen one fella a couple of days back. He come in here to buy a pair of boots. Crowley's his name. I didn't have nothing cheap enough, and he didn't have the money. Didn't look like the kind I'd give credit, so he went off without his boots.
They was drunk, Eli. He didn't do it purposeful. The bullet must have hit a rock or something and bounced up.
Maybe.
Who was the other fella, Pa?
Boy, what are you doing with that gun belt on? You know your ma and me's told you never to bring it in the house.
Well, I was out back showing Mr. Kendall.
You never mind what you was doing and showing. You go hang up them guns this minute, you hear?
Do as your pa says.
Now, you seen what guns can do to your Uncle Amos. Now me.
Don't excite yourself, Eli.
I ain't exciting myself. I ain't gonna have that boy turn into killer.
I ain't, Pa. No
now, don't
such
you
thing.
Talk back to me, boy. I'll strip the hide off on you.
Come back, Eli. Dick, do as your pa tells you. Go on.
I know, baby.
Did you put the water on the boil?
Yeah.
Good. Now, why don't you go and see if the doctor's coming?
Yeah, all right.
Now, you take off them guns and belt.
But
Boy, when I get up, I'm gonna thrash your backside, I am for sure. You're just getting too big for your britches.
Please, son, can't you see what you're doing to your pa? Do like he says.
I'm sorry, but I saw what happened to Uncle Amos. Well, ain't no one gonna shoot my pa and get away with it.
Boy, you come back here.
Dick!
Don't worry, I'll get him.
You tell him it was an accident. Wasn't no real shooting.
Dick!
It was an accident.
Dick! Dick! Wait, I want to talk to you. Now, slow down, young fella.
Don't hold on to me, Mr. Kendall. I got a thing to do.
And I use your head. You can't fight two grown men.
If I got to, I can. Ain't nobody around here thinks I'm big enough to
You're
use a gun.
You're big enough. Shooting at a target is a little different facing a man.
I ain't afeard.
I didn't say you were. But you go looking for trouble with a couple of drunks, you're going to get hurt.
Mister, I'm 17. I was there last year when my Uncle Amos died. The blood running out of him. They shot him in the back because he was like my pa. He'd put up his guns and wasn't going to fight no more. Uncle Amos, he said to me, just before he turned on his side, he said, boy, whenever you see a coward with a gun, you get scared. You get scared enough to go for yours before he gets his out. Pa's always preaching about living peaceable. All right, well, if they won't let you live that way, you got to make them let you.
Your father said it was an accident. Did you hear him?
Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I heard what he said about that fella Crowley coming to the store for boots and Pa not giving him credit. It's true, I was in the store. That Crowley had it in for Pa. Well, we're going to live in this town. If folks is going to have respect for the Jacksons. Pa don't care none. I do.
Supposing you do find them, what are you going to do? To start shooting?
I'll give them a chance to draw.
Dick, will you listen to me?
I ain't listening to nobody, Mr. Kendall. My pa's been hurt bad. I aim to pay the man out that done it. So don't you go trying to stop me.
Who says you can't be in and out at the same time? Every Monday through Friday on CBS Radio's House Party, Art Linkletter invites you out right in your own home, office, or car. House Party is just what the name implies. It's loaded with fun and surprises. It's one place you can be sure you'll meet new and exciting people. Remember, CBS Radio's House Party is a standing invitation to a good time. It's yours for the listening 5 times a week on most of these same stations.
I walked up the Deadwood Street with young Dick Jackson, the two old 46s slapping heavily on his thin young legs. I knew that I could have physically stopped him, carried him back to his parents, but I also knew that it would have solved nothing, perhaps only made matters worse. So I did the only thing I could do. I went with him. First to Gerber's saloon, then to half a dozen others, looking for the man named Crowley and his companion. An hour later, we found him in the Deadwood Saloon.
That's Crowley. That's the one. Over to the bar.
You know what you're doing.
I know.
You know what it's like to shoot a man, to kill him.
I guess I'm going to find out, Mr. Kendall.
You said you weren't practicing to be a short trigger man. That was a lie, wasn't it?
No.
Shooting at a target hasn't been enough. You've just been waiting for an excuse.
That ain't so. Get out of my way.
Dick.
Boy, now you ain't never seen nothing like it. He shows up in this here dance. Public as a zebra, wearing a fried shirt, a hard-boiled hat, and a smelling of bear grease and lavender-flavored soap. I tell you, he looked as miserable as a razorback hog that's dropping himself on a fence post. Hey, well, look here. Hey, boys, come over here, have a look, see. Hey, what you carrying there, son?
Buffalo guns.
Hey, boy, don't you know packing them great big old heavy things would like to make you a bow-legged before your time?
Crowley, you just shot up my paw an hour back. I aim to kill you for it.
Kill me! You kidding that there mealy-mouthed tailor down the street? Boy, oh, I might have known. Mealy mouth, little son.
Mr. Crowley, I'm going to put my gun back now. Next time I unshuck it, you better draw your own self, because I ain't going to be doing no fancy trick shooting a glass out of your hand. I'm going to kill you.
Boy, you sure are fast, that's for sure. Yeah, but you just a kid. Now, I ain't got no quarrel with no kid.
You gunned my pa.
Oh, no, that there was an accident. Me and Loba here, we was just having some fun, and your pa, well, he come waltzing up with the missus, and he kind of got in the way of a bullet is all. It wasn't nobody's fault.
You gonna draw?
Loby, you tell a kid, ain't it the truth?
Sure it is. Didn't mean no harm.
Mister, you with the kid here?
Yes.
Well, you get him out of here, huh?
No, I don't think so. I want to see his face when he kills you.
You loco.
I'm a newspaper man. It's my job to write about such things. The birth of a killer. He can draw and empty his gun before you can even get yours out, Crowley. He knows it, too. That's why he's going to be a very important killer. He might even be as famous as Billy the Kid. Go for your gun, Crowley. He's waiting. He wants the excuse to see you die. If you don't, he'll kill you anyway.
No, that ain't so. It ain't so.
Now, look, mister. Kid, I'm sorry about your pa, huh? I'm sorry for what I said. Ain't no sense getting riled. I got a few dollars. Help pay for the doctor and all, huh?
He doesn't want that. He wants to be able to go home and tell his father and his mother what he's done. Show them what a big man he is. He can shoot a gun. Kill. That'll make him very grown up.
No, that ain't why. I told you it ain't.
Now, here, kid. Now, you take this. It's 40 bucks. You give that to your old man. It'll pay for the doctors and such. I got me a little strike a couple days back, you see. You tell him I'll be in and buy the best suit of clothes and custom maids he's got in the store. You tell him that now, will you?
We don't want your money. You stay away from us, you hear? If you don't, I'll be back.
Oh, sure, boy. Anything you say.
Give me the money, Crowley. I'll see his father gets it.
Yeah, you do that! Huh? Dick, look out!
Crowley had pushed me off balance and had gone for his gun. The boy was at the door 20 feet away, his back turned. Crowley fired, and in that same instant, Dick whirled and shot back. He shattered a bottle on the bar. Both had missed. I was only 6 feet away. My two bullets took away half of Crowley's face. I took the boy back to his father's place. The doctor had removed the piece of lead in Eli Jackson's shoulder, and he was resting more comfortably.
Well, I'm glad you found him, Mr. Kendall, for if there was any trouble.
There was trouble, Mr. Jackson, but it wasn't his fault.
He didn't do any shooting.
No, he didn't kill anybody. He didn't hurt anybody.
Dad, I want you to take Uncle Amos' guns. Sell them. I don't want them. No guns, ever.
Shucks, boy. I couldn't get two bits on them old things. You figure you've had enough play out of them. You just hang them up. Show them to your grandchildren someday.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
Mr. Kendall, will you be in Deadwood for a while?
Yes, for a while.
Well, now, that's just fine. I tell you, come on back in a couple of days. I'll be up and around, and I'd sure like to make you a fine suit of clothes.
Thank you. I will.
Dick, you show Mr. Kendall out?
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Kendall? I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I might have been killed.
You might?
You was right about shooting a man being different from a target. I could shoot the glass out of his hand because I knew that didn't mean nothing. But I couldn't kill him.
Killing's ugly. You saw what Crowley looked like.
I saw.
You should have remembered what your uncle told you. Never show a man your draw unless you mean it. Someday you might have to throw down with him.
I'm sorry I didn't remember it. But I won't need to again. I promise you, Mr. Kendall.
I'll take your word for it, Dick.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Eddie Firestone, Stacey Harris, Jack Crucian, and Ben Wright. Join us again next week for another report from the Frontier Gentlemen. Bud Sewell speaking.
Next, we have an episode of a soap opera called Whispering Streets, and this was done in the late 50s, 1958 to be precise, and the episode's called Mary Nolan.
Whispering.
Whispering.
Whispering. Whispering Streets. Whispering Streets, a complete news story each day, Monday through Friday. And here is Hope Winslow.
Hello. The streets that whisper their way through the slums, that are sordid and ambitionless, are the saddest streets, no doubt of that. In a flat on one of these sad streets, Mrs. Nolan came in from a day's work and stood on the threshold of the kitchen sitting room, surveying her husband. He was sprawled out on the sagging couch, dressed as usual in an undershirt, a pair of ragged trousers, and no shoes whatsoever. He turned his head lazily.
Well, you're back again?
That's what tears the heart out of me. It's always back again to this place. Never in my life did I see such a dirty flat. If you had any pride at all,
I got pride enough about something.
Such as?
Oh, no, take it easy.
Take it easy? We can't both of us afford to take it easy. One of us has got to work. Why don't you go out with a rod gang and earn your living with a pick and shovel, Jim, if you can't with your brain? You've got enough good muscles. Why don't you mop up the floors of this flat and wash the windows?
Ah, stop your yammering. Ain't a man's place to do such things. You're a cleaning woman by profession. That's your job.
For 2 cents, I'd smack that grin off that face of yours.
Now, sit down, Mary, and take off your little shoes.
Yes, then there'll be two of us. Oh, but me ankles are that swollen. Oh, there, that's better. Where's Mike?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Well, if you was a decent father, you'd watch out for your only son. All the things going on in the city and Mike getting worse and worse. Hanging out in pool rooms, running with a gang.
Mike is young. Young folks should have their freedom.
Well, young folks should keep in line, Jim. Where's Nanny?
Oh, Nanny. Heavens, I don't know. Oh, yes, I do, too. She went over to that lady that lives in the Traymore Apartments to pick up your week's money. You know, you told her to go over there late this afternoon.
Well, did you give her a quarter for bus fare?
No, I didn't have one on me.
Well, the poor child will have a long walk.
Well, she can ride home after she gets your money.
Oh.
You know, Nanny's been acting funny of late. Sort of mopish, not talking. It ain't right for a 9-year-old girl to be so mopish. Yeah, like he's not, it's just growing pains.
Well, I'm real worried about Nanny. I'm worried about everything. You and Mike and Nanny. You should have a steady job, Jim.
Oh, heaven forbid.
Well, Mike should have a steady job.
Well, that I agree with.
Listen to me now, Jim. Mike's got a high school education. Nanny should have a smile on her face. That's you, Mike?
No, Mama. It's me. Mama, what do you think? What do you think?
Well, I could write a book about what I think. Ah, you're smiling for a change, Nanny. What is it, sweetie?
It's the lady at the Traymore apartment. She's a lovely lady, Mama.
Oh, she's a real lovely lady. I've got 3 lovely ladies I work for. Mrs. Cadman, oh, she's awful quiet. And Mrs. Craig. Oh, I pray to heaven she'll stop grieving after a while. She and her husband had just 1 baby, Jim, and they lost it.
Is that so?
It was that tragic. Poor lady. She just can't seem to pick herself up.
Is that so?
Yeah. And then there's Mrs. Stoll at the Traymore Apartments. Oh, did she give you my wages, Nanny?
Yes, Mama. They're in this envelope.
Oh, that's fine. And we'll eat tonight. Now, let's have some corned beef and cabbage and a nice cold bucket of beer.
Oh, shut your big fat mouth, Jim. Go on, Nanny.
Well, and she gave me $1 for myself.
Well, no, that was real generous of her.
And, Mama, guess what?
What?
She's got a little girl 1 year older than me, and she's outgrown her last year's clothes. And Mrs. Stowell says she's going to give them to me. All of them. And they're lovely clothes, Mama. And they have such nice outfits for school. There's a plaid dress, and let's see, there's a blue skirt with 2 blouses and 2 sweaters. And soft like kittens. And there's socks that match the sweaters. And there's a pair of shoes that just fit me. And there's a party dress. It's made out of taffeta, Mama, and it rustles.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Holy St. Patrick, Jim. You're sitting up.
Yeah.
What's come over you?
My pride. I told you, I got pride. And my kid ain't gonna wear the cast-off clothes of any other kid. She ain't gonna accept charity. I call it an insult, that lady offering your kid's cast-off clothes, Nonny.
You call it an insult? But what'll I wear to school if I don't take those clothes? I haven't anything that's decent. Everybody will look at me and laugh at me. If I can't have any decent clothes to wear to school, next Monday, when school opens, I'll run away or kill myself. That's what I'll do. I'll kill myself.
In just a moment, Hope Winslow will be back again. But first, it's true that none of us can be all things to all people, but there's no reason why you shouldn't break out of your own routine long enough to enjoy our realistic Western adventures on Gunsmoke, or share in the emotional experiences of the people whose stories are dramatized on CBS Radio's City Hospital. To live the life of a pioneer in Dodge City, join us on CBS Radio each Saturday and Sunday as thieves, cattle rustlers, dance hall girls, and even respectable people stir up excitement on Gunsmoke. New worlds of interest open to you each Saturday, too, as most of these same stations bring you CBS Radio's City Hospital. Go behind the scenes at a huge metropolitan medical center this Saturday. Meet people at crucial moments in their lives. And follow Dr. Barton Crane as he solves each human interest problem on CBS Radio's City Hospital. And now, back to our story with Hope Winslow.
Jim Nolan was sitting up straight in the center of the couch with his shoeless feet on the floor. Mrs. Nolan was leaning forward, staring at the door through which her young daughter had vanished. She spoke after a minute.
Well, for goodness sake.
What a way to carry on.
She was so happy when she came into the house.
Happy as a lark. But I'm blamed if I let anybody patronize.
I passed Nonnie in the hall. She was bawling her head off. You swat her, Pa?
No, I didn't swat her. I just spoke my mind.
Your mind?
And if you're inferring that I haven't got a mind...
He spoke his mind all right, Mike. And where were you last night and why didn't you come home?
I stayed with a guy.
What guy?
Take it easy, Ma. I'm 21. I'll move out of here for good if you start asking questions.
Well, you might as well move out. We don't see nothing of you anyway.
Skip it. What'd you pull on Nonnie, Pa?
I'll tell you. There's a lady I work for, one of my best customers. I give her 3 days a week cleaning.
She lives at the Traymore apartment.
That's right.
Yeah. Nonnie went there to collect her ma's wages, and the lady offered her a bunch of clothes that her own kid had outgrown.
And your pop suddenly developed pride. He said that he wouldn't have his kid accept charity.
Oh, yeah? Well, I don't suppose you've noticed how Nonnie goes around most of the time looking like a rag bag.
Now, you shut up, Mike. We can't afford to dress her like we was in the 400.
We can't afford to dress her decent, that's the truth of it. So she was crying because you wouldn't let her accept the clothes, huh? Was that it?
School starts on Monday, Mike. Nonnie said she didn't have nothing to wear to school. That everybody'd laugh at her.
Yeah, she ended up saying she wouldn't go on Monday. Said she'd run away or kill herself. You ever hear such stinking talk? Yeah, will you split a can of beer with me, Mike?
Now you're lying down again.
Just like he always does when something's important.
What's so important about a kid's clothes?
So long since you were a kid, you don't remember. It ain't so long since I was a kid. Just think back to the time I got in a scrape over that car.
Think back? I don't have to. The thought's with me always. Nanny was coming then. I went to the judge and cried. That's the only reason you got off, Mike. Me pregnant and crying. You only 11 or 12.
Yeah, no, Ma. Me 11 or 12. Went with the older guys and helped them steal that car because the kids laughed at me at school. But my toes were sticking out of my shoes and my elbows were sticking out of my sweater. They started to razz me about seeing my old man coming home drunk. That's why I looked like a rag bag. Well, I got decent clothes now.
Well, how you earn them without a job is beyond me.
I don't earn them. I'm just lucky, Ma. I'll sit in on a game tonight. I'll win, Nonnie, a new school outfit, believe me.
My daughter ain't gonna wear charity clothes, and she won't wear clothes that a gambler gets for her, neither.
Oh, there's his pride again. Well, Nanny ain't going to wear clothes I earn for her. Because what I earn just pays the rent and the food, and there's nothing left over. Jim, if you're so fussy about where your daughter gets her school clothes, you better go out and make some money yourself.
That's a riot.
What's a riot?
You earning money. You ain't got it in you to earn money.
Who says I ain't got it in me to earn money?
Your son does. And I second the motion, Jim. You're a good-for-nothing lazy spalpeen.
Gosh, a mighty ma, look. Pa's standing up.
Where's my shoes, Mary?
I wouldn't know wherever you left them last.
Sticking out from under the couch.
Ah, so I see. Oh, I don't wish I could change. Hey, one of these laces is broke.
Not from tying it, ain't it? It's from dry rot.
That's enough from you, Mike. Well, so long.
Jim, where are you going?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Yes!
Wouldn't you just like to know?
It's a fine thing to happen at the end of a hard day. If you've sent your father to the saloon, Mike...
No, Ma, he ain't gone to the saloon. His credit's worn thin there. Hey, Ma, this place looks fierce.
I know.
Bad enough for a poor kid to break her heart over clothes without having to live in a dump like this.
I'm too tired. After scrubbing all day for other people, I can't clean my own shack.
Look, Ma, I'll give you a hand if you like.
You?
Yeah, me. Let's at least have things decent, if possible, by the time Nanny gets home.
Nanny didn't come home until 8 o'clock. She looked white and woebegone and very, very tiny. Her mother, in a clean apron, was sitting in a sagging rocker. Mike was playing a game of solitaire at the oddly clean table. Mrs. Nolan spoke with a sharpness that ill-concealed her worry.
Little girl shouldn't stay out this late.
Why don't you go make yourself a sandwich, kid? There's stuff in the icebox.
Okay. Where's Papa?
Heaven only knows.
I'm sorry I spoke like I did. To Papa and to you, Mama. I won't run away, and I won't kill myself. I'll go to school, and I'll try not to notice when the kids laugh at me. I shouldn't have talked so crazy.
You weren't talking so crazy, kid.
No, you weren't talking so crazy. I do wish your pa'd come home.
Well, so what if he don't? He's no good anyhow, if you ask me.
You're a fine one to talk, Mike. Offering to gamble so your sister can dress decent. You're as bad as he is.
Well, she can dress decent without me gambling. Job came up today at the docks. Yeah. The checker. There's good money in it, too. This here's the first of the week. I can earn Nanny a dress and a decent pair of shoes, and that ain't all. How about it, Nanny?
Thanks a lot, Mike, for saying it. But I know how things are. You'll get out with the boys, and I've seen you when I went past the pool room. And when you try hard to win, that's what you told me once, you're apt to lose. I don't want a sandwich, Mom. I guess I'll go to bed.
In just a moment, Hope Winslow will be back. Two can laugh as cheaply as one. That's the marital theory invented by CBS Radio's The Couple Next Door. Each Monday through Friday, Peg Lynch and Alan Bunce portray our young married pair. So for another Laugh on Life, join us on CBS Radio as most of these same stations present the next comedy episode of The Couple Next Door. And now, back to our story with Hope Winslow.
Mrs. Nolan was heavy-eyed the next morning when she went to work for Mrs. Craig, who'd lost her child. She didn't have much to say, but Mrs. Craig, who never had much to say, didn't seem to notice. Mary Nolan didn't mention that her husband had stayed out all night and that her son Mike had disappeared before breakfast. She got through the day somehow, cleaning more steadily and efficiently than usual. She came home by bus. The Craigs lived in the suburbs, to a pathetically clean flat, which was inhabited solely by a child.
Where's your father? Where's your brother, Nanny?
Oh, I haven't seen neither of them, Mama.
I don't know what to think of it.
Mike said he was going to earn me a dress.
Oh, don't take any stock in that, Nanny.
I don't.
Your pa's done bad things, plenty of bad things. Like throwing up jobs and quarreling with a foreman. Not taking any jobs at all. But they were shiftless bad, Nanny. Not bad, bad. Never in all the days of our marriage has he stayed out all night.
It's my fault. But the taffeta ruffled and the sweaters were so kitten soft.
I know, dearie, I know. You're only a baby. You can't be blamed. I'm a woman. To have all the men go out of my home at once, Listen. Put on your coat, Nanny. Walk down the street. And when you come to the pool room, kind of slow down and glance through the windows. And if Mike's there, beckon to him.
Yes, Mama.
And peek under the door of the saloon as you go by. And if your pa's there... Oh, but he won't be. He hasn't got a cent. Who do you think that would be now?
I don't know, Mama. Nobody ever rings our bell.
Oh, I'm as nervous as a cat. I feel like I've got an icicle for a spine, Nanny.
So do I.
Please go, dearie. Open the door.
Yes, Mama. I'll be right there.
If Jim's been in an accident, I'd have heard. Bad news travels fast, they say, and it's the truth. If Mike's got himself shot up, which I always thought would happen, well, I'd have heard that, too.
Mama.
Yes, dearie, what is it?
It was a man. Awful rough-looking man.
Well, have you ever seen him before?
No, Mama. He brought a letter. It's for you.
A letter for me? Oh, heaven forbid.
Well, you better open it, Mama.
I'm scared to. Oh, my knees have turned to jelly. You open it, Nanny.
But it's your letter.
Open it even so. Read it aloud, dearie. You can read real good. You're 9.
All right.
All right. Who's it from?
It's from Papa.
In his own writing?
Uh-huh.
Well, what does he say?
He says he's sending a letter by a stranger.
Well, we could see that for ourselves. What else, Nanny?
He says not to expect him till you see him.
Oh, that's cold comfort. So I'm not to expect him till I see him. It's a fine way for a man to tell his wife he's left her. And as for Mike, where is he, I'd like to know? Right at this time when I need him. Who's there? Who's there, I'm asking? Oh, like it's not, it's more bad news. Who's there?
It was Mike who walked into the room. Mike, looking somehow different than he'd looked in the last few years. He was less shifty-eyed, and he was holding himself a little straighter. He rumpled Nanny's hair as he walked past her. He paused, grinning, in front of his mother.
Well, here I am. What you got to eat, Ma?
I haven't fixed nothing yet. Mike, your pa hasn't come home yet. It's the first time since we were married that he's...
That he's worked more than 2 hours at a stretch.
What?
They put him on the midnight shift right off. He worked clean through till noon.
You mean it?
I mean just what I'm saying. He worked through till noon. Now he's taking some shut-eye down at the docks because there's a big ship in tonight and they'll need all the hands.
Mike! You're as clear as mud, Mike. For heaven's sake, explain what you're getting at.
I told you I was going to take a job at the docks, didn't I?
Yeah, but I didn't believe it.
Give me a kiss, Ma.
The back of my hand, will you?
It is something else you won't believe. You could have knocked me over with a feather when I saw Pa walking along with a bale on his shoulder. And I suppose you could have knocked him over with a feather when he saw me. Of course, now my job as a checker is practically white collar and he's only a laborer, but... Hey, Ma, you look real shaky. There ain't nothing to be shaky about, Ma.
No.
You stop crying, Nanny. Look, a working man likes to come home to smiling faces. Now, we'll go shopping, kid. Saturday afternoon. I got Saturday off. And we'll buy you some school clothes. You and me and Ma and Pa. The family. Together.
A little child shall lead them. Not that a 9-year-old is a very little child, but even so, the good proverb comes true again. We're mighty glad that Nani got her school clothes, and take it from me, she did get them. Mrs. Nolan said she worked for three lovely ladies, among them a Mrs. Craig, who'd lost her baby and couldn't stop grieving.
In just a moment, Hope Winslow will be back to tell you more about Mrs. Craig. But first, it's too bad in a way that nobody's figured out some way to put our laws into packages. Packages clearly marked, handle with care. For nothing else is ever broken with as many dramatic repercussions as the law. Witness the fate of lawbreakers every Sunday as programs like CBS Radio's FBI in Peace and War and Indictment describe the workings of justice in thrilling detail week after week on CBS Radio. Our FBI in Peace and War racks up new triumphs as confidence men, hijackers, racketeers, and underworld characters of every kind feel the full weight of the law. Broadcast on most of these same stations on Sunday, too, Indictment lets you follow in the footsteps of an assistant district attorney as he lines up the witnesses and gathers the evidence to bring another criminal case to a just indictment. Both of these exciting shows make it obvious why our laws should be marked, handle with care. Mark them both clearly in your own mind as explosive. Now, here is Hope Winslow to tell you about Monday's story.
Mrs. Craig, who'd lost her baby, had also lost the ability to smile, the desire to ever enjoy happiness. You'll sympathize with her husband as he fights a strange battle. Until Monday, then, this is Hope Winslow saying goodbye from the Whispering Streets.
Whispering Streets brings you a complete story every day, Monday through Friday. Today's program was written by Margaret E. Sangster. Featured in the cast was Kathy Lewis as Hope Winslow. Others in today's show were June Foray, Jack Moyles, John Wilder, and Kathy Garber. Whispering Streets was directed by Gordon T. Hughes and produced by Ted Lloyd. Best wishes to CBS Radio affiliate WTAR, Norfolk, Virginia, celebrating 35 years on the air next Sunday. Dan Coverley speaking. Join us Monday for another complete story from The Whispering Streets.
Listen while you work. Hear Howard Miller in the daytime on the CBS Radio Network.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.